Blog Talk Radio.
And thanks for coming to another edition of the Wise Women Media Radio Show. We have a special guest for you this evening, but before we get started, I just want to go over our sponsors, which are Daughters of Isis, Florida Nature Photos, Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio, Power New Media and Public Relations, Roundtree 7, Tarot and Stars, and the Hoodoo Blog. I also wanted to remind you all that if you hit us up to keep us funded and on the air, you can find us at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. And we were previously on Posteris, but Posteris is shutting down on April 30th, so we did have a backup blog on Blogspot. So again, wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. will be our new permanent home. Also, I wanted to call attention to the fact that we will be starting our show an hour early. So on Friday nights, every Friday night, we will start our broadcast at 10 o'clock. Also, one more newsworthy item. Both Here Be Monsters and the Wise Women Media Radio Show are under a new network. It's called the Commons Project Network. There's several other radio stations on Blog Talk Radio that are involved with this. Worldwide Hippies, Air Amarta Fio, Pinko the Bear, AWOP Radio, Roundtree 7. So I will have more information next time we do a broadcast on the Commons Project Network. In the meantime, let me introduce our guest, which is Kimberly McEwiston. She lives in Alabama. She's a retired nurse, retired teacher, and because of what happened in the Gulf oil, with the Gulf oil spill and the and what happened in the Gulf of Mexico on April 20th, 2010, really spurred a lot of people to action, including Kimberly, who has really become quite a voice in the Gulf on a number of different levels and can probably teach a lot of us a thing or two about activism and how to keep going and how to fuel that energy. So, Kimberly, are you with us there?
I sure am. Thanks a lot, Anita, for having me on.
And, you know, before I started the show, as I was just thinking during the countdown, because I do a lot of that as the countdown is happening, I was thinking, when was the first time we talked? And I started to think back on that. You had posted something on Facebook, and I cannot even remember the specifics of it. And I said,
It was about the Venus Project, NASA's Venus Project, about the algae biofuels.
That's right. And I said, send me your number and I'll call you. And we had our first conversation, I think. It might have been maybe a month or two after the Gulf oil spill. It was very early on. I remember that.
Right. Yeah.
And
we talked, and then we actually met for the first time in September of 2010 during the spill.
Right, because you were coming down to have a little R&R, and we met at one of the local restaurants and had breakfast together and couldn't stop talking.
Oh, I know. So tonight should be interesting because there is a lot going on in the Gulf right now. And with the BP trial in full swing, and activism right now is at a pitched height. And I'm happy to say that there is such unity now along the Gulf with the activists and with the projects that are going on. It's a really good time here as far as people actually working together and making a difference. And this is Gulf-wide. I mean, from Florida clear to Texas. And, you know, a lot of common ground. So, you know, I'd love to talk about whatever you want to discuss.
One of the things that I find amazing after all of this time is the fact that even though this has been a horrific situation, there's a reason why we were all brought together. And I love the fact that there's commonalities with all of us. And you know, we've made some real sacred friendships and bonds throughout this whole horrible episode.
Absolutely right on that. You know,
yeah, I really feel that our positive energy and coming together like this will have a lot to do with healing, not just the planet, but ourselves, each and every one of us. So I think that, you know, I wouldn't trade that part of the experience for anything. So I'd love to see the Gulf cleaned up. But why don't you start and tell us a little bit about, because this is so unreported, a little bit about what's going on with the BP trial, because that's really not coming out in the news at all.
Well, I think the first 2 weeks of it were basically, just to start out, right now, BP is having their behinds handed to them, and rightfully so. And, you know, there was a lot of testimony in the last couple of weeks of the former, you know, workers on the rig and, you know, how BP just basically had a culture of being unsafe. And we all knew this, and we all knew this from the time at Texas City and, even before that. I was just reading something tonight that today or this week, the kind of focus had shifted to Halliburton and their role and Transocean in their role. And I guess there was a lot of testimony this week about the cement that was used and this and that. And BP, you know, of course, is trying to dispute all that. And so, you know, I think a lot of interesting things are going to come out in the trial. I don't think everything has been said yet, and I have a feeling this is going to drag on for a while.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
I just think because it's so involved and so technical. And maybe that's part of the reason media is, you know, regular media, you know, isn't paying too much attention to it because of all the technical issues that are being discussed. But let's face it, corporate media doesn't discuss things that are really, really important.
Right, right, right. I'm just amazed that when I've talked to people just recently about, you know, the BP trial, it's almost like they don't know anything about it. It's like totally off the radar. And I think as time goes on, probably the powers that be feel that the general public will just forget about what's happened.
Well, and that's why it's so important that we, the people of the Gulf Coast, keep this alive. And we have to do this by doing shows like you have and by posting things on social media, Twitter, Facebook, you know, Google Plus, all that. And I think as a group, we have the power to keep it alive. And because people need to know what really happened here and not the fluff. And
Right. What
happened here was the worst man-made environmental disaster in human history. And it doesn't go away in 34 months. It just doesn't. And I can speak for Alabama because I live here. I live 3 miles from Orange Beach. And so I know the beaches. I'm on the beaches a lot and documenting still. And we are still getting tar balls, tar patties, tar colonies, which is where a whole rack line of toxic tar balls will wash up in a group. And, I mean, it just depends on the day. We have good days and we have bad days. When the surf's up, it's a bad day because the tar mats are right offshore and they're toxic. I mean, you know, the chemical composition of this oil we were told it was supposed to weather, but we're finding through scientific studies like Auburn study that these chemicals are not breaking down, and it's because of the use of dispersants on this oil.
I want to get to the dispersants, but the one big question I want to ask you is, how has what is happening right now affected your local tourist economy? Are there tourists coming down? Are they believing?
We're in full swing spring break right now.
Okay.
And yeah, the kids are all down here. Honestly, I try to stay away, you know, from the beach on spring break. It's just kind of not my thing. So but the traffic today was just unbelievable on Route 59. It goes directly into Gulf Shores. I was out and about for a little while earlier this evening, and it was bumper. You know, it was pretty intense for, you know, just a regular Friday night, you know, coming into Gulf Shores, Alabama. So yeah, I would say they're pretty busy down there.
So people are swimming in the water and recreating in the water.
Yes, they are.
And they are not even aware of the toxic levels that are in the water.
No. You know, the pretty slick commercials that BP put on the TV for the last couple of years, you know, and the million-dollar ad campaigns have pretty much convinced a sleeping public that everything's fine.
And what about the now? What I'm thinking is, what about the dispersants? Are they still being sprayed, or is your community spraying from the
aquifer? To my knowledge, here in Alabama, they are not. Okay, there's no reason for them to spray anything in Alabama. What we have coming on our beach is the BP tar balls from 34 months ago.
Okay.
Because those were all sunk to the bottom of the ocean or the Gulf by the dispersant at the time of the oil disaster. Okay, we don't have like fresh peanut butter oil coming up on our beaches. These are actual tar balls, tar patties. And what they do is they wash in with the surf, and then they sit on the beach. They are heated by the sun, and they get gooey.
Ew.
And, yeah. And so you don't want to be stepping in them, you know, or getting them on you, because the chemicals are still, you know, pretty toxic, according to what Auburn is saying.
So,
and I know I don't want that mess on me, and I know I wouldn't want it on my child.
Oh, yeah. What about the seafood? And is there a regular testing done, or are they promoting
seafood? Oh, yeah. They have all kinds of campaigns down here, Alabama seafood. Quite frankly, I will not eat it. I haven't eaten any seafood from the Upper Gulf since the spill. You know, I believe that, and from what I've been told and what Dr. Wilma Subra has said, is anything below Tampa is probably okay. Anything south Texas is might be okay, you know. But I've just chosen not to eat it on my own. And
you know, what bothers me with that logic, and I know she's an accredited scientist and everything, but what bothers me with that logic is, you know, fish and shrimp don't know boundaries. So,
well, right, all I can do is state facts, you know, of what we've been told.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm not going to, you know, question, you know, as far as, you know, what a scientist says. If a scientist says this, this is what they've said. And so I just kind of go by those kind of, you know, that way of thinking, because, you know, I'm not a scientist. I don't know. But I do know this. I do know that, you know, the shrimp, some of the shrimp coming up and a lot of the shrimp coming out of Louisiana has tumors. You know, we've all seen the pictures of that. You know, there's mutations, and, you know, some of the shrimp have no eyes, and there's no eye sockets. I have seen photos of baby aborted dolphins with no eye sockets and no eyes. It's really, really terrible. It's terrible.
In the regards of not eating seafood. In fact, I'm probably just almost at this point a vegan, because I don't trust my government in regards to the meat industry or the seafood industry.
Food safety,
anything like
right.
And we still don't know what we're getting when we're eating vegetables. I mean, we don't know what's in the ground. And, you know, we could go on a whole other show and talk about Monsanto, but that's not for this show. But in any case, I just don't feel safe eating any of that, so I abstain.
And I mean, I tell everybody very freely, do not eat the seafood from the Upper Gulf. I mean, you know, that's where the oil is. You know, we know it's on the bottom. And shrimp, crab, oysters, they live on the bottom. So what's that tell you? Common sense, what's that tell you? You know, and it would be one thing if it was, I guess if it was just, you know, the oil spill or the oil disaster had happened and they never used dispersants, we would be talking a whole different ballgame.
Right, exactly.
You know, crude oil's bad enough, but, you know, if had it been skimmed and, you know, they would have had to have burnt some of it, there was no getting out of that with the amount that was released. But had they not used dispersants, we would be having a whole different conversation, I believe.
Now, some of our earlier conversations when we were calling a couple of times, we talked about how the Corexit was made by Nalco, which is a company that is pretty well established up where you come from in
Naperville, Illinois. I used to go by their main office quite a bit when I lived up there. And they are located, Nalco headquarters is located within a 2-mile radius of BP Chemical. And I find that very interesting, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. And the same thing with where their offices are established there in Louisiana.
Right.
Very, very close to the water and very, very close to each other and very close to the major arteries so they can ship stuff back and forth quite easily.
Right, right.
You know? So it looked, you know, all of this was strategically and logistically planned, and I can't help but think that the whole incident was premeditated. And other people I have spoken to have said that there was a 50-point plan for actually making Louisiana not habitable. And I don't have a lot of information on that, but
right.
I wonder where that information came from and how that could be proven, you know.
Well, I don't think you're going to prove, I mean, outright prove something like that right away. If that
right.
would be the case. I do know this. I do know how the extraction industry would love nothing more than to have the Gulf of Mexico to themselves to do with it what they please. You know, that would be a gold mine for them. And so as far as the extraction industry, and I'm talking about all of them, I'm not talking just one company. I'm talking all of them. You know, that would be a windfall for them. I don't believe that they care about what happens to the Gulf or what happens to the people. What they care about is their bottom line. It's
right.
all about the money. And so if BP was buddies with Nalco, as we know they are, they're going to get whatever they need to clean up as cheaply as possible through their best buddy.
Right.
And that's the reason, you know, they chose Nalco. I mean, you know, I had information that in the beginning BP actually had some stock in Nalco. And, you know, knowing the locations of where Nalco at the time was located, and Nalco is now a part of Ecolab. They're under that kind of umbrella of another corporation. Yeah,
it's
still
kind of
Nalco.
Like they do this thing with small companies here in Florida. It's called you have this one name, and then you have DBA doing business as another name. So
right.
it's almost like it's a way to mask who you really are. And I don't know if I approve of that. I just don't think that's
no. To me,
cool.
When Nalco merged in with Ecolab, I kind of figured, well, they're merging in with them because eventually Nalco and corrects it. Or, you know, I mean, there's going to be major lawsuits, major. And I see that's the next big trial thing coming down the road, you know, from the oil disaster. You know, the sciences said that, you know, the crude oil and the Corexit dispersant mixed together, and that's really important to know, was 52 times more toxic than just the crude oil alone.
Wow. That's
yeah.
And people are still, like I said before, people are still swimming. And it's
yeah.
just that they just don't know. They just don't know.
Well,
or they,
I mean, you know, I think that people don't know, but I also have to look at the folks that have lived here all their lives. This is a way of life when you live
right.
here near the beach. And to take that away from people is sometimes just too much to bear. And so I do understand some of the folks that go in the water when it's looking good. I understand it. You know, I get it, because when you love your home and the Gulf is your home, how do you go about doing anything any different?
Yeah, that's a good.
And plus, you have folks that, you know, still believe that their government is telling the truth.
Yeah. A lot of people.
Right.
And I hate to say, but a lot of them I don't like to use this term, but they've become foxified. So instead of seeking out real news, it's easier for them to go to the news channel that really has become more like infotainment.
Right.
It's not real news.
It's fluff.
Yeah, yeah. It's not real news, and it's not It's not what most Americans, I hate to say, are thinking about.
Right.
It's almost it's almost like propaganda and disinformation, and it really plants seeds of untrue things.
Oh,
very
absolutely.
Little fact. Very
right.
little back it up. So I tell people, you've been foxified. I can tell as soon as I'm talking to them about something, if they have a weird slant or something on a particular issue, I'll say, you've been watching Fox News, haven't you?
Right. Exactly.
I can usually tell I'm like dead on with it, you know?
Right.
So,
right. Well, and it's the same way as like when people actually believe that corporations are people, you know, that they think that corporations should have the same or have the same rights as a human being. And it blows my mind to even have a conversation with those people because I can't wrap my head around that.
Well, that's a perfect segue to our next topic of conversation as we went over a few of these in our pre-interview. Tell us a little bit about what Dr. Ricky Ott and Lisa Marie and a few of the other people, for those listeners that are out there, let me explain who Dr. Ricky Ott is. She's written quite a bit, 2 books, but she's an Exxon Valdez survivor from up in Alaska. She's a marine toxicologist. She really helped bring a lot of this to the fore in regards to legislation and the whole lawsuit for the Exxon Valdez victims in Alaska, and she worked very, very hard on getting some of those monetary reparations. Unfortunately, before a lot of them could get their money, they died because they were suffering from the toxic effects of that much, much smaller spill outside
right.
of Cordova, Alaska. So very, very incredible woman to hear speak. She was working with the Move to Amend initiative with David Cobb when the Gulf oil spill happened. She flew down to the Gulf, and I think she spent almost a year in the Gulf region after the Gulf oil spill trying
to
help.
Yeah, she did. She has been a true warrior friend to
the
Gulf Coast.
Helping the communities come together to, you know, the steps they needed to take to band together to not only document their stories, but to actually protest and to actually speak out to their leaders about what had happened to them, the elected folks and all of that. So Dr. Ricky Ott is still working on all of that, but she has also, before she ever, the Gulf oil spill ever happened, she was with Move to Amend. She had a website up called Ultimate Civics, and she is now working on getting this 28th Amendment built into the Constitution, stating that corporations are not people, money is not free speech, and to release the stranglehold that the corporations have on all of us, because right now the corporations are ruling us, and they, in fact, are our government, and our elected leaders are really the shadow government, is kind of how I put it, because
yes,
they have no real power.
You're right.
So, you know, they're beholden to the corporations because that's who funds their political campaigns. So tell us a little bit about your work with Dr. Ricky Ott and how that's going.
Okay, well, in February, Ricky came down to the Gulf and began to form small groups all across the Gulf, from Florida to all the way over through Louisiana, and work the presentations on making it right for real. And we're working together to ban the toxic dispersants, have them banned nationally. But we're starting with the Gulf region, and she's doing these workshops and teaching us how to work with our local city councils and our local governments to call for resolutions to ban these dispersants on oil spills. So we had a two-day workshop in Fairhope, Alabama, back in February, and Ricky is coming back on March 23rd, and we're going to do another presentation on March 23rd at the Unitarian Fellowship in Fairhope, Alabama, and her presentation will be from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m., and then immediately afterwards, we're getting into a working group, and we are having a potluck for purpose, and we will be discussing different strategies and different ways that we can go to our city leaders and our local leaders and have these resolutions passed. Now, I feel like if we do this, it's going to create a domino effect, and it will increase the power of the people of the Gulf to get this into a more national campaign. And there is a petition to ban toxic dispersants online, and it's a national campaign that Ricky has through Ultimate Civics, and it's at iPetitions. And it is ban the toxic dispersants. And, you know, I ask everybody to go online, and you can find it on her site at ultimatecivics.org and sign the petition. This is really important. And it's important for the whole country because with the drilling and the fracking and the pipelines and the oil we have flowing, even on our land, they can use these dispersants anywhere. Any waters, and it's got to stop. You know, we have to protect human life, and we have to protect our environment, and it's not all about the money. You know, some things are more important than money, and our lives and our people and our land is always going to be more important than a damn dollar. And so, you know, this campaign is just so very, very important. In the presentation, it is just a really, really deep presentation in civics of how our government works and how it's supposed to work and now how it doesn't work. Our democracy is broken, and we, the people, are the ones that are going to have to fix it. You know, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, you fix it.
Right. Exactly. So you had mentioned where you were telling us about that. I'm looking for the petition. So I would encourage everybody to go to ultimatecivics.org. I don't know if it's my computer, but I wasn't able to pull the website up. But I know it's there and I've seen it. So chart
right.
it down.
UltimateCivics.org, and as I said, that is the national petition. And as I said, we have working groups now working with Dr. Ott from Pensacola, Alabama, Louisiana, you know, and also Coden, Alabama, down by Bayou La Batterie. They have a working group. So I'm going to tell you what, and I'm going to tell the oil companies now, you are not going to mess with the Gulf people. We're not going to take it. You know, they thought there was this great opinion, I believe, with the extraction industry that the southern people were dumb, the southern people were docile and wouldn't fight back. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to fight back. We're not going to take this land down. And as far as the BP trial goes, we want a full trial. We want full disclosure, and we do not want a settlement.
Right, right. Never, ever, ever accept little.
No.
Because
why should we accept
that's what
second
the people
best.
In Alaska after the, you know, the Exxon Valdez, they accepted little in the hopes that, you know, they would be able to enjoy something before they died, and so many of them died. The average age of the people that died from that particular disaster was 53 years old.
I know.
The average age.
I know, and it's pathetic, and I understand. You know, my little community action group is called Alabama Coast United, and I work with a woman by the name of Michelle Walker Harmon. A lot of people know her. And, I mean, through this whole thing, you know, we have been adamant with the BP, you know, with dealing with BP. But we see the humanitarian stuff, and some of it is very, very sad and tragic, and it breaks our hearts. And but the thing is that, you know, I personally understand if a fisherman has to settle because they're losing everything and they have to feed their families. But we're talking about the trial here. And this
right.
is the civil trial. This is the federal government, the state governments co-prosecuting. And our federal government should not say, hey, you settle for second best. No. You know, as far as this trial going on right now, this is for the Clean Water Act fines and the Oil Pollution Act fines. And this is, you know, goes to the Restore Act Trust Fund. That's the money that will go to restore our, you know, beaches and our marshes and our coast. And in no way should our federal government be making a decision, you know, for us when, you know, we don't want that. And we've made it very loud and clear to Eric Holder. I know that right before the climate change rally in D.C., a bunch of activists were, you know, having meetings and taking letters and taking petitions from the Gulf Coasters up there. And so far, you know, they're prosecuting the case, and there's a trial, and things are coming out in that trial, and that's the way it must remain. You know, we just can't accept whatever BP wants to make a deal with. You know, this isn't let's make a deal. This is people's lives, and this is restoring part of America that is so important to the entire country. You know, we can't second best it here.
Right.
And we absolutely.
I wanted to make sure that I had this right. To this date now, there has never been a medical payout for anybody that's ill. Am I correct in that?
I'm not sure on that. I could not answer that. I just don't know.
Yeah, the last time I spoke with Dr. Wilma Subra on this show, which I think was probably 6 or 9 months ago, she had mentioned that, and, you know, I just didn't know if that still stood. And
yeah, it could very well be.
I asked her how many people were reporting to her, and she told me 300,000 people had reported.
Yeah, I know there's a lot. I meet a lot of people, and almost everybody I've talked to, and we get talking about the oil disaster and health, there's something wrong. You know, they've had problems, their kids have had problems, or their neighbor. Where I live, I'm very close to Orange Beach, as I said, and I live in a retirement community. I live, you know, where it's over 55 community. And I will tell you right now, Anita, my neighbor right next door to me, his wife passed away of cancer in 2011. And my neighbor directly in back of me has had now a reoccurrence of leukemia that started up in 2011, and he is undergoing treatments. We just are starting to see a lot of, at least I'm seeing a lot of clusters of, you know, serious illness, very serious illness. Now, did the, you know, toxins trigger these things? I think long term we're going to find out.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think that they can keep that under a rock forever. I think the real truth will come out regarding that. Now,
Right. Tell
us how all of what's happening in the Gulf region is so tied in to the XL pipeline, and give us a little information.
This is very interesting. Well, to begin with, the Cushing, Oklahoma to Texas, to Port Arthur, Texas, leg of the pipeline was approved by President Obama. And they are basically, TransCanada is claiming eminent domain. They are taking people's land. Okay, mm-hmm. A foreign corporation is taking people's land and putting a pipeline in that they don't want. And, you know, I'm sure that some of the listeners have heard of the tar sands blockade. And these are very dedicated activists that are going out and basically putting their bodies on the line to stop this. I don't know where in America it has ever happened that a foreign corporation could come in and take your private property. I don't get that. But what I do get is that, especially in Texas, there are a lot of activist judges that have an agenda with the pipeline and have investments in the pipeline. And so every time these things go to court, they're being ruled on for TransCanada, and they're having to be appealed. Well, we all know TransCanada is a multinational corporation. They have billions of dollars, and we have Texas farmers and ranchers that are regular, everyday people that don't have the money to be able to fight these court cases. So, you know, that's been the main thing that the tar sands blockaders have really, really emphasized, is the fact that TransCanada is basically stealing people's land to put this pipeline in. Now,
so we can, I can hearken back to what happened probably, two and a half months ago with Daryl Hannah and the lady in Texas.
Eleanor Fairchild, yes. I got to meet her when I was in D.C. Back in February. She's a wonderful woman.
Tell us a little bit about her story, even though some of us have heard it on Democracy Now!, but maybe quite a few of us don't know about it. So, yeah,
okay, Eleanor Fairchild and her husband had owned property in Texas since, I believe it was 1982. They bought their farm or their little ranch, and her husband was a former oil geologist or something of some sort. He worked, you know, in the oil industry. And from the story and testimony that she, or testament that she gave, that I heard, he passed away on March 2nd, and TransCanada came in and stole their land on March 11th and of last year. And so she's been fighting to keep her property hers and to keep this pipeline from coming through. And so the bulldozers came, and Ms. Fairchild, who was 78-year-old grandmother, actually ran and put her body in front of the bulldozers to keep them from clearing the easement for the pipeline. And she was arrested on her own property and taken away. And I think it's a sad day for this country when a corporation can do this. And I think it's very sad that people don't understand that corporations do have that much power in this country right now. And, you know, we were on that subject a little while ago, but that is just the case. So the folks in Texas are trying to fight this through courts. The tar sand blockaders are just amazing people. They're a lot of young people, a lot of college students, a lot of older people. But they have just really put themselves on the line to keep this pipeline out. This tar sands are filthy. They're the filthiest oil on the planet. It's not even oil. It's a sand. It's a solid. They have to pump chemicals into it to even get it through a pipeline. And you don't even want to know what's in those chemicals, let alone what's in the oil, which makes tar sands oil even more toxic than the mixture of crude and Corexit. And, I mean, we saw what happened up in Michigan with the Kalamazoo spill. And,
right.
You know, I mean, people up there were evacuated, like, within 1,000 feet of the river, and they're seizuring. And, you know, Enbridge is not taking responsibility for that spill. And that's one of the main things, is that the extraction industry is refusing to take responsibility for their accidents. And this has got to stop. And it's got to stop soon. And so, you know, we learned a lot from the Enbridge spill. And so we know what can happen if tar sand spill. Tar sand does not float. It sinks. It's heavy. So there's no way to really clean it up. There's no real contingency plan. You cannot clean it like you know, boom it or try to absorb it like you would if it was just floating on the top of the water.
So they call that type of petrochemical or product bitumen, right?
Bitumen, yes, and it's they call it dilbit in the industry, but bitumen is the solid. It looks like the tar balls that we're getting off our beach. You know, they're a solid, and so what they have to do is heat this stuff up and then pump it full of toxic chemicals. And, you know, I've heard different stories. I don't know. I'm not an expert that the same chemicals they use in fracking fluid is what they're using to dilute the bitumen. And so now, you know, you're thinking about that, and you've got this toxic tar sand, and you have this fracking fluid. Well, that's not a good combination for anything. And pipelines spill. You know, pipelines leak. Happens all the time. And with the infrastructure in the United States the way it is, and the maintenance on the infrastructure, can you imagine, you know, a pipeline that would run 1,700 miles? I mean, to me, it's insanity, you know, and to a lot of people, it's insanity. Try about 50,000, you know, at the Washington, D.C. rally. So, you know, it's one of those deals where this is not good for our country. This is good for the oil companies because they export 60% of it. 60% of all tar sand oil that has been refined has been exported.
So this is, therein lies the biggest lie perpetrated on the American people, is that because of what these oil companies are permitted to do by our own government,
right,
that it's going to lower the price for us, for our gas at the pump, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's all one big lie.
So people
people
are watching the infotainment and are blindly believing what they hear
right,
before they even do any research on it, which is really just, you know, it's easy to figure out if you check the news reports. You can check foreign news reports and pretty much
right,
a lot of info.
Right.
So,
right. I know myself, I don't pay attention to what NBC, CBS, ABC, you know, the mainstream, because basically what you're watching is you're watching the commercials. You know, who's advertising? If you're seeing, you know, oil companies, insurance companies, that's how the news is going to bias.
Right, right.
And so I prefer to watch Free Speech TV, Link TV, Democracy Now. You know, I listen to RT quite a bit, Tom Hartman, because you do get a full view of the world and not
yeah,
just what the corporations want you to see.
Exactly, exactly.
But
so
I wanted to
mention,
where
do we go from here? What should be the activists' next step? Now, I'm going to just let you know we're going down into the last 12 minutes.
Already, and I haven't even talked about the Mobile tar sands.
Well, we can keep this going as long as you like, because the show is scheduled for 2 hours. We don't have to use the whole 2 hours, but whenever you've talked everything out, we can end the show, so it's entirely up to you. But, let's move on to the next topic.
Okay. Well, after
hearing about the tar sands, is what do we do now, and where we know how we got to this place, but
right,
how do we get ourselves out of this place?
Well, I got some ideas about that pipeline, but maybe we shouldn't talk about it on the radio, you know.
Well, we did about one thing when they start to move everything down on the trains, because they'd be restricted every other way, is to make
right,
sure that we've got pictures and documentation and all of that.
Right. And that's what I wanted to get into. Because of the controversy with the pipeline, not only the main Keystone XL, which would come down from Canada, which has not been approved. Okay, as of right now, the actual 1,700 miles has not been approved, and we're really, really pushing that President Obama does not approve it, because he made a promise in his inauguration speech that he was going to do something about climate change. Well, if he approves the Keystone XL, we know he was lying.
Right.
Because the Keystone XL is major, major, you know, game over. Climate change is here, and it's over with. So the Keystone XL, the main pipe, cannot happen. It just cannot happen. Simple. Now, from the Cushing to Port Arthur, Texas, like I said, there's a lot of pushback on that. You've got blockaders, you've got protesters, and so the companies have decided to kind of circumvent that and bring it in to the ports in the Gulf Coast by rail car, heated rail car. The two corporations that are in partnership with each other in doing this is ARC Terminals and Canadian National. And the plan is, beginning in June of 2013, ARC Terminal and Canadian National will be running tar sands from Alberta, Canada, down to the Mobile area. And that will be Blakely Island Terminal. And ARC Terminal is located right on the Mobile River,
mm-hmm.
and which leads right into Mobile Bay, which goes right into the Gulf. And they will be offloading the tar sands out of the heated rail cars via pipe under the Mobile River to carry it to the tank farms on Blakely Island, where it will be stored. And a Plains South Cap Pipeline Company has been approved to put a pipeline from 10 Mile Terminal, which is at Blakely Island, to Pascagoula, Mississippi, to the Chevron refinery to refine the tar sands.
Wow. Wow.
And so I was able to do a little logistic looking around down there here a few weeks ago, and from what I could see, the new tanks to store the tar sand oil there are built. And as of about a month and a half ago, all they needed was to be painted.
Hmm.
So this is not good. And in some of the news reports that I've seen, that there is the possibility they will be widening the port and to bring in tankers to be able to load tar sands oil onto the tankers and take it to Port Arthur.
Wow. So they've had this planned for quite some time then.
Oh, yeah. While we were fighting the oil disaster, this was all taking place in 2011.
Yeah, right.
And what really, really chaps my hide is that the Alabama Department of Public or the Alabama Public Service Commission is who approves pipelines here in the state of Alabama, okay? And for this pipeline, this 45-mile pipeline that'll run from Mobile to Pascagoula, they ran an ad, you know, because they have to have public meetings and stuff and public hearings to be able to, you know, give these permits. They ran an ad in the Mobile Press Register, but held the hearing in Montgomery.
Hmm.
So, I mean, even if you saw that there was going to be a public hearing on this in Mobile, how many people, number one, even see those tiny little pieces of news in the back of the paper? And second of all, who can travel to Montgomery, which is 4 hours away?
Yeah, it's convenient for them to do it that way because they're not going to get opposition from the people.
Well, right, and they are using the same eminent domain. So from my understanding, this pipeline is going to go under mostly wetland, you know, our wetlands.
So we're talking about damage to the aquifer and any freshwater Yes.
Well, and we're talking to, we're talking wildlife habitat. We're talking our estuaries and, you know, our wetlands.
So this is, yeah, because once it goes into the aquifer, then it's pretty much in the food chain, too.
Right.
And there's no stopping it at that point.
Oh, I know. And being that we just found out about this in November, right before the holidays, and with everything else going on, you know, we really haven't had a chance to really take a look and see what we could do. You know, what kind of opposition can we mount, you know, against this? This project will commence. I mean, it's built, almost completely built, but they will actually start moving the tar sands in June. And it bothers me that only one larger environmental organization is opposing this, you know, here in Alabama. The other ones are, I don't know what they think.
So who is the one that's opposing?
The one that is opposing, and how we found out about it, was Mobile Bay Sierra Club. They're very upset.
And nobody else has stood up and said that they were going to, that they were going to, that they're the only ones.
They're the only ones.
Wow.
So,
that's mind-boggling.
Isn't it? But I think it has a lot to do with the fact that our Restore Act Recovery, Alabama Recovery Council, wait, you get this. This consists of our governor, Robert Bentley, who is now the chairperson for the Oil and Gas Board Interstate Compact, okay? And the fact that James Lyons, who is the director of the Mobile Port Authority, is the co-chairman of the Restore Act Recovery Council money here in Alabama.
So the connections always seem to go between elected officials and the oil and gas companies. It's always like a you wash my back, I'll wash yours, you know.
Right, right.
And it's just a never, it's never ending with them. And unfortunately, this has been going on in the Gulf region for quite some time, in particular.
Oh, I know.
Louisiana.
I mean,
but
new.
Yeah, but this is happening so much, and people don't even understand. These are the leaders that you elected.
Right.
But they're no longer working for you, and this is why Move to Amend and Ultimate Civics and everything steps right into the fore on this, because the corporations truly, truly at this point do rule the roost everywhere, and they are the ones that call the shots, and they are the ones that make the decisions about, basically they're making the decisions now about who will live and who will die.
Well, absolutely, and to bring up that, I want to make mention that we do have here on the Gulf Coast some of the Native Americans standing up, and they have formed, we have all kind of gotten involved with the Idle No More campaign and the Idle No More project, because what affects Canada is going to affect the Gulf Coast, okay? And these tar sands begin in Alberta, Canada, very close to First Nations, and their lands are being destroyed. And by accepting this pipeline into the United States, we are basically committing genocide against the Canadian First Nation. And it's wrong. It's absolutely
wrong. We are
wrong.
Down to 1 minute. And
okay.
I didn't schedule the show apparently for 2 hours.
Okay.
So
no
we've
problem.
Got 1 minute, and I
okay, well, I do want to mention an event that's happening in Pensacola, March 21st through the 23rd. It's 3 global days of action. Idle No More Gulf Coast. You can check them out on Facebook, and, you know, they're really a good group to work with. Like I said, everybody's united in this, and we hope we can get something done.
Well, thanks for being on the show tonight, Kimberly, and anybody else that wants to hit us up at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. Leave Kimberly a message there, and I will make sure she gets it. And thanks for listening in tonight. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on, and we'll hope to have you again, and we'll see you at the same time next week. Good night, everybody.
All right.